Hey, this is Noah Levine, founder of Against the Stream, Refuge Recovery, and Dharma Punks. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I hope you're enjoying the Dharma. Together, may we create a positive change on this planet. If you feel moved to leave a donation, there's a link in the show notes. May our paths cross soon. Welcome, everyone. Anybody here for the first time tonight? Welcome, 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 welcome. Welcome to anybody online joining us for the first time. Welcome back, everyone else. I'd like to start the group by introducing a topic and having you talk to each other for a few minutes before we meditate and then have a topic and discussion. I'll give you a topic to discuss. I'm in the end of a five-week series on the Buddha's teachings on positive emotion, what we call heart practice. We've already gone through compassion and forgiveness and loving kindness and equanimity. And tonight we're going to talk about appreciation, appreciative joy, empathy, attunement, gratitude, all these things. So for your small group, here's your topic. Three things that you enjoy, you take pleasure in, you appreciate that other people experience. Because a core part of the teaching is empathizing with other people's happiness. You could think of it as the opposite of feeling jealous about somebody else having fun. And actually being really stoked for them, really happy for them, rather than like, fuck, I wish I was surfing or whatever it was. Three things that you can connect with that you appreciate about other people experience that. And then one thing about yourself that you're appreciative, that you're grateful for. So mostly focusing on others and your relationship to other people's happiness, joy, success. And, you know, trying to come up with three things. And then one thing about yourself and what you're grateful for, appreciative, or experiencing joy about for yourself. So three for others, one for yourself. Try to do groups of three. Just do those three things, like kind of report it to each other first. Let each person say the four things, three about other people, one about yourself. Try to get that done first. And then if there's more time, you can discuss it and say, oh, I related to that. But first, just report your three and one, your three and one. And at home, I'll put you in breakout groups. So in the room, go ahead, find a couple people you don't know yet. Before we meditate, I'll say a few things about my understanding of this practice and the intention and where it sits in the teachings. One of the ways that I like to think about and that I understand these positive emotional responses, heart practices, is that the Buddha, after some years of meditation, through primarily mindfulness, present time, investigative awareness, freed himself from clinging to pleasure, learned to meet it with non-attached appreciation, freed himself from aversion to pain, learned to meet pain with compassion, all of his own pain and the pain of the whole world with compassion. The outcome of his awakening was, he said, now, rather than that kind of selfish, aversive, attached, normal human thing that we all experience all of the time, he said, now I experience loving kindness for all living beings. Now that I've let go of the clinging to I and me and mine, now it's just a feeling of love, a feeling of kindness, a feeling of compassion and appreciation and equanimity. The outcome of mindfulness is that we become more attuned, connected present with what's happening inside of us and the impermanent nature of all of our thoughts and emotions and the impersonal nature of the mind that judges and compares and craves and, right? The mindfulness shows you, oh, what's happening here. And then you wake up and you see like, oh, that's happening for everyone. This is not just me. This is the human condition. So the Buddha said, you know, I woke up to this, you know, this is what it's like for all of us. And the only appropriate response to pain, my pain, your pain, the pain in the world, is compassion. It's the only wise response. It's radical. It's normal to have aversion, to have judgment, to have hatred, to have fear of pain. But the wise response, the enlightened, the awakened response, is compassion. Likewise, with pleasure, he said, I spent, you know, my life either chasing pleasure or trying to avoid pleasure. You know, there's that whole story, the Buddha spent all of these years as an ascetic, this kind of extreme renunciation, where he thought like, well, it's attachment to pleasure that's the problem. It's the clinging, the craving, the attachment to pleasure. So what if I just avoid pleasure? So, you know, each one of us looking at our relationship to pleasure and either that chasing it constantly or avoiding it because it's too dangerous. Better not do that. I get addicted to everything fun, so I got to avoid everything fun. He said, but the awakened response was just non-attached appreciation and this attunement and connection and sort of seeing the interconnectedness that we're all in. He said, what remained was this sense of not only enjoying without clinging to my own pleasure, but enjoying the happiness of others. When you're attuned to what people are experiencing, if they're experiencing pain, the wise response is to have compassion for their pain. If they're experiencing joy, the wise response, the enlightened, non-self-centered response, is to appreciate, oh, you're having joy. I appreciate that for you. I celebrate that. I empathize. And one of the ways that this is traditionally translated is empathetic joy. Empathizing the joy that other people, empathizing with the joy that other people are experiencing. And so it's not something that we think about all that much. Maybe we think about gratitude, but usually even gratitude, we think about like, I'm grateful for the shit in my life that I like, right? And maybe I'm grateful for some of the people that provide me with the kind of positive attention that I like. But this whole other thing that says practice enjoying, empathizing, feeling with the happiness of other people. I feel like it's one of the, for most of us, it's one of the most counterintuitive teachings and practices, because compassion, like we're so, we have that negativity bias. We're so drawn towards what's wrong, you know, like the news. It's all about the suffering, the corruption, the ignorance, the wars that are happening, the oppression that's happening. And so there's so much focus on compassion, and we get, you know, necessary. Compassion is half of the practice. But there's also all of this joy happening in the world. One of the simple ways the Chinese Buddhists put it is, in this life of 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. But we have to look at how much of the joy are we missing? Do you really have 10,000 joys? Is your heart balanced? Is your mind balanced in response to being able to see the joy in the world? Or are you just blinded by all of the suffering? Because there's 10,000 sufferings, 10 million. This is an intentional shift towards what's not wrong. What's beautiful? What's pleasurable? How are people, not only in my own life, but in the world, in the people that I'm connected with, becoming attuned enough that when someone's happy, you're like, oh, I'm fucking happy that you're happy. I enjoy your happiness. I enjoy the pleasure that you're experiencing, the fun that you're having, the success. Now, success is a traditional part of the term. But it's, I think we have to define it as kind of well-earned success, wholesome sources of success. Not, we're not over here trying to celebrate greed, successfully greedy people who have become billionaires and are destroying the planet. That's not what we're trying to appreciate. Appreciate the kind of the, when, you know, when people are like working hard on their education or on their career or on their meditation practice, and they're finding success in their recovery, in their, you know, wholesome endeavors, not just accumulating bank accounts. And maybe, you know, there's nothing, we don't want to totally dismiss financial part of our life. That's part of our life too. You know, it's nice to have some financial freedom and some financial success. And you can also celebrate that when it's not, you know, being earned in a way that's creating negative karma for them. Right livelihood. As long as it's right livelihood, which is a core part of the Eightfold Path. And yeah, celebrate it. Celebrate that you've got a promotion, that you, you know, that you're, you know, moving forward in that field that you're working towards, or that you, you know, are making money. So thinking about this, of the practice of attunement and connection, and part of the teaching is we're very sensitive beings. We're connected to each other. If you're mindful, if you're paying attention, you're not only paying attention to, in the mindfulness teachings, we spent 15 weeks going through the mindfulness teachings this year. And every single aspect of mindfulness, it says both internally and externally. Mindful of your own breath and body and emotions, and mindful of other people's bodies and emotions. How are you feeling? That attunement, that connection that we can start to, when we get out of some of our self-centeredness, we start to connect more both internally and externally. Empathizing with happiness. Sort of a trip to think about, right? Because usually we use the term empathy as like with the negative emotions, the afflictive emotions, like you're suffering, I have empathy for your suffering. You're happy, I have empathy. It almost sounds like dismissive or something like, I have empathy for your happiness, you poor bastard. Sorry that you're so happy. Like, because doesn't empathy sort of sound like I'm sorry? For me, I have a connotation of like, empathy is like, I'm sorry you're experiencing that. But it's not I'm sorry, it's I feel it. I feel for you that you're experiencing that negative emotion. I feel for you that you're experiencing that positive emotion or sensation or experience. Empathetic joy, taking pleasure and the happiness of others, and wishing and training our minds in the meditation that we'll do in a few minutes, training your mind to wish for the happiness of others. May you be happy, may you be successful. May the happiness and success and joy that you experience in your life increase, is one of the phrases that we do. That optimistic, positive, encouraging. And you can look at your mind. Is your mind very encouraging naturally? Maybe. You might be a cheerleader. Maybe you are. Maybe some of us have that sort of natural personality that's just like, yeah, good for you. Go for it. You can do it. And I'm happy for you. But I think most humans are, we're just so self-centered that we're, you know, we experience more jealousy of other people's success than we do appreciation. And so you can also think of this teaching as the opposite of coveting and jealousy and envy. Rather than you're happy and successful, there's less for me. It's you're happy, you're successful, you're experiencing some joy. I celebrate that with you. I appreciate that with you. I was teaching in Holland years ago. And I don't know what they speak Dutch. I don't know what the Dutch word is, but the common, not greeting, but farewell. You know how like here we'll be like, yeah, see you later, see you next time, or, you know, take it easy. Over there, the common, whatever it was translated as, they were translating it in English as success. They would just say to each other, like upon parting, wherever you're doing, may it be successful. Wherever you're going, success. And kind of, and it's just part of their language. They probably don't really fucking mean it. Like, we don't really mean like have a good day, whatever we say. But and I like that. And because of this phrase and this meditation of wishing for success for each other, may you be successful. May you be successful as freeing from a Buddhist perspective bias. May you be successful at freeing yourself from suffering. May you be successful at finding true happiness, true well-being, not just material and sensual pleasures, but you may have some real healing, some real awakening. May, if you're on this path, whatever path you're on, may it lead to freedom and having that sort of attitude and encouragement and, and training our heart to feel it. The opposite of, I hope you get hit by a bus. And, of course, these teachings are for all beings. Empathetic joy, appreciative joy can be easy for your kids. They're like, yeah, I want my kids to be happy. I'm fucking stoked when my kids are happy. They can be easy for your partners, for your near and dear, your close, the homies. Like, yeah, I'm stoked when the homies are having fun. But it gets more and more difficult when it gets to people I don't know, people I don't like. Because, when we're talking about developing this, there's the five categories that we do in loving kindness and compassion and forgiveness, where we're for ourselves, for our benefactors. It can be easy to feel appreciative joy. I think about my meditation teachers, therapists, sponsors, people who've like, really supported me. I'm like, yeah, I want them to be happy because they've fucking been generous to me. But then when it comes to like the people that we have resentments towards, the people that we judge, the people that hold different political views, the people who we deem ignorant and also wishing for their happiness as part of this all living beings, compassion for their ignorance, forgiveness for their confusion, and appreciation for their joy. Now it's a high bar to like really wish for your, in recovery and 12-step recovery. I remember early on, being taught that like, if you have a resentment, pray for them, pray for the people that have hurt you. It's like that. It's this sort of, it's not really a prayer, but it's developing this attitude of like, may you be happy so that you're not such a douche. May you be successful. May you free yourself from suffering so you stop causing so much harm. So that, and really trying to develop that attitude towards each other, even the difficult people in our lives, the difficult people in the world. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to sit here. We're going to try to do that. And we'll talk a little bit more about it afterwards. So find a way to sit that's upright, relaxed. Allowing your eyes to be closed, releasing any unnecessary tension that your body may be holding. Soften your brow, your jaw, shoulders, chest, belly. Releasing, softening. Begin with the personal, with reflecting on what you're grateful for, what you appreciate, what you enjoy. One of the traditional Buddhist reflections about this is developing gratitude, appreciation for this human experience. life, this birth that we've taken, this opportunity of being alive to develop wisdom, to develop compassion and appreciation. Gratitude towards our parents, our grandparents, our ancestors, the hundreds, perhaps thousands of beings that had sex. That brought us into being. Gratitude, appreciation for the Dharma, the meditation instructions, the teachings. Include any other spiritual traditions that support you, recovery, psychology, different religions. Teachings, books, literature that have brought you closer to freedom, have inspired you, encouraged you, supported you. Some gratitude for your physical form, this body, however healthy it is currently, just this body that allows us to move around as well as it does. This body, these sense doors that we experience the world through, seeing and hearing, smelling and tasting. This mind, appreciating the human mind, the good parts of it, being able to plan, being able to remember, to investigate, to analyze, to contemplate, to be creative. It's fucking cool to have a brain. To be able to think. To have a heart, to experience love, as well as sorrow. Of course, there's all of the unpleasant parts of the body, the heart, the mind that are worthy of compassion, that often need forgiveness. But for now, we're turning the lens towards what we appreciate, the pleasant parts, the good parts, the useful aspects of this physical life, this incarnation. Reflecting on the happiness that you do experience, the moments of ease, of well-being, of contentment. Whatever levels of equanimity, serenity, tranquility you touch, you experience at times. The acts of service, of generosity, helping each other. Reflecting on all of the experiences of joy you've had in this lifetime. The falling in love. The moments of elation, excitement. Reflect on the success you've had so far. Particularly with your meditation practice, mindfulness, how it supports us. How we've been able to develop a bit more compassion and able to forgive ourselves and others. The amends we've been able to make, asking for forgiveness, making amends. In one teaching, the Buddha said there's four types of happiness. You can reflect on these in your life. He said there is the happiness of sense pleasures. Reflect on all of the delicious smells and tastes and sights. The sensations. The sense pleasure, happiness. He said there's also the happiness of material things, both the sense pleasures and material things, quite transient, impermanent, but also we do enjoy, they do bring us joy. Your stuff, your apartment, your house, vehicles, clothing, music. And he said there's also the happiness that we experience when we become free from debt, debtlessness. I think this is both emotional as well as financial. To not owe amends, to have said what needs to be said, taken responsibility for any harm we've caused. As well as expressed our appreciation, our gratitude for the people who've been kind to us. And the last, and I think highest form of happiness, he said, was the happiness of blamelessness. When we're living our life with integrity, with wisdom, with the intention to not cause harm, or being honest, or being kind, or being patient, tolerant, skillful with our speech, with our actions. a happiness of blamelessness. Appreciating all of these things about ourselves, and now shifting to each other. Just as I wish to be happy and successful, I wish for your happiness, for your success. Start with the people that you were in the small groups with, people here in the Sangha, the community, people you're sitting next to. Training the mind, the heart, with the phrase, may you be happy and may you experience joy. May you successfully awaken, recover, heal. May you find the ease, the contentment, the well-being that you've been seeking your whole life. True happiness. May you become blameless. Bring to mind people that you love, that you care about, people that are easy to appreciate. May your happiness continue, may it increase. I wish for you success. Think of the benefactors, the teachers, the wise friends. With appreciation, connecting with the joy of the freedom that they've found. The Buddha's liberation, something to celebrate. Something to appreciate. So grateful that the Buddha figured it out. That all of the people that have come before us, practicing meditation, living an ethical life. So inspiring. Uplifting. Now try to bring to mind somebody that you don't know. Could be somebody here or somebody that you saw today at work or the market, the bank, driving down the street. Reflecting on this stranger who, just like you, has joy and sorrow in their life. And wishing for their happiness. Assuming that they do have some, meeting it with appreciation, empathy. Trying to connect with that wise part of our heart that is happy about other people's happiness, that appreciates and celebrates. Now expanding to some difficult people in your life, and don't go to the people you hate the most, but maybe just some people that annoy you. With the phrase, may you be happy. May whatever joy you experience continue and increase. May you successfully heal what needs to be healed. Extending this feeling of appreciation, this intention, this aspiration to connect with the joy that does exist in the world, outward in all directions, to the east and west and north and south, till we cover this whole planet. 8 billion humans who all experience both joy and sorrow. You can go beyond the human realm, including the animals, in the sea, in the sky, the earth. Reflecting on all of the playfulness, all of the connections that exist. The laughter, the smiles, the affection. May the happiness, the joy on this planet continue. May we learn to see it, appreciate it, take pleasure in it, celebrate it. Feel grateful. May all those who are trying to heal be successful. Those who are trying to recover be successful. May more and more become debtless, become blameless. More wisdom means more happiness. The last couple of minutes, just come back to your body here. Your heart, your mind, sitting, breathing. Perhaps you've become uncomfortable from sitting still. You can even try to meet the discomfort with some appreciation, this opportunity to change our relationship to pleasure and pain, to develop a wiser relationship, more compassion, more appreciation. when you're ready, appreciating opening your eyes and moving around. So again, remembering that this is in the context of balancing compassion and kindness and equanimity with appreciation, and that, you know, these are the all four work together. Sometimes the analogy is used, they're called heart practices, the wise heart, the wisdom heart. You know, like our human heart, the cardiac muscle has four chambers. And that, you know, you need all four of those chambers to pump the blood where it needs to go. You need the compassion chamber, you need the kindness chamber, the equanimity chamber, and the appreciation chamber. And you can't just be all appreciation all of the time with no compassion, or you're delusional, right? Like, and you know those people, those toxic positivity people that are just all fucking, you know, rainbows and butterflies, and aren't willing to look at the sorrow and the, you know, and the suffering and the ignorance and the compassion that's necessary. And then then we also know, and probably some of us are those people that are just so stuck in the focusing on what's wrong and the pain and the sorrow and the corruption and the ignorance on the planet that we don't let ourselves experience joy and appreciate joy and see that, yeah, there's 10,000, 10 million forms of suffering happening. There's also 10,000 forms of joy happening, and being able to balance it and see both and appreciate. Against the stream is, you know, the flag that I've been waving for decades, and that the Buddha, it's a quote from the Buddha. He said, you know, to really do this is so counter to our natural instincts. It's not really normal to appreciate other people's happiness for all living beings. That's, you know, like, it's not really normal to have compassion for your own pain. It's counter to our instincts. It's a little bit normal to have compassion for some other people, but to have compassion for all beings, it's not. This is radical. It goes against our biological evolutionary process. You know, there's something about our survival instinct evolutionary process that says hate pain and cling to pleasure and be self-centered. Think about your happiness, not other people's happiness. There's just this part of our nature that is so focused on I and me and mine in order to survive naturally. So, you know, the wisdom of the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, is very radical, very different than ordinary human mentality of self-centeredness. And in order to really experience this level of appreciation, we have to get out of self. We have to get out of that self-centered, I am always thinking about myself, and start thinking about how are you feeling? What are you feeling? What, you know, what's the appropriate response to what other people are feeling? And so I keep coming back to the practice and the experience of knowing that we're connected, that we're influenced, that we feel what other people are feeling. The practice of attunement, the experience of being attuned, of sort of tuning in. And I do think it has to come from the inside out. I do think we have to really kind of be intimately aware of what we're feeling, and start some level. I think it takes some level of breaking our identification with our own thoughts and feelings, awareness, attunement, to be like, oh yeah, my mind's doing this, my emotions are doing, you know, knowing what you're feeling, which is what mindfulness gives to us. And then we can start to be like tuned into what other people are feeling. And not just the obvious ones, but on subtle levels, you start picking up on, you know, just body, you know, posture and facial expressions, and it just energy seems a little hokey, but there's something to it of kind of, you can feel people's energy sometimes, what they're putting off. And that list that I gave in the meditation instructions of the four different kinds of happiness. And there's probably more. That's probably not a totally conclusive, inclusive of everything. But in one place, he does say, it's okay to like material things. And they, you know, like your stuff makes you happy a little bit, right? I like stuff. But it's temporary, you know, it's not like you get some material thing and it makes you happy forever, right? The truth of impermanence with material things is pretty obvious. And we've all experienced that, like, yeah, I was really happy when I got that new thing and it lasted for how long? How long did that new thing make you, right? Kind of give you some joy. There's a shelf life for stuff before that repetitive craving. Second noble truth comes in and says, like, yeah, last week I admitted, like, a few years ago, I decided I really need a hot rod. And I bought a 1930 Ford Roadster, and I wanted it for about a year, and I did the research, and I saved the money, and I got it. And I was like, I was so fucking happy when I had that hot rod. This is fucking so fun. Drive around. I don't know, not very long, you know, until I was a little bit bored of it. And then, you know, just last week I traded it for a motorcycle, and I'm really excited about the motorcycle. Fucking really happy with the 1950 Panhead that doesn't run and probably won't for months, but eventually it will run. And I'm really stoked that I, you know, but it's this material thing that's like, it doesn't really work. It's not like I'm going to be happy forever with the chopper or the lowrider or the panhead or the hot rodder, whatever it is. Like, none of the stuff really works. It's fun, right? It gives us a little bit of joy. Like, oh, I like motorcycles. I like, you know, you get a new surfboard, new skateboard, new shoes, new whatever it is. You get a new phone. Can't wait to get a new phone. It's going to be exactly the same as my old phone. It has an extra camera on it or whatever it is, or get a new computer exactly the same as my old computer. I'm going to buy another pair of Converse. I have 7 pairs of Converse, but I need a new pair of Converse or Vans or, you know, whatever it is. Stuff, a little bit of happiness. It's important for us to know that it's not the source of happiness. It's one of the problems with our world, is that people think that stuff is going to make them happy and really believe that. Probably most of you have heard this story. There's a teaching. Ajahn Chah is a Thai forest lineage master. He's the head of the lineage that I'm most connected with, or, you know, one of the highest. He died in the early 90s, or 1980s, I think, maybe early 90s. Anyways, there's a story about some Western students went to see him, and he's giving all these teachings about non-attachment. And, you know, the monks give up everything. They, you know, they have, like, I think they're allowed to own 2 robes, sets of their robes, and they have their bowl that they eat their food out of, their begging bowl, and, you know, they have a couple of little things, but they've really renounced possession other than, like, their robes and their bowl. And one of the uppity Western students at one point confronts Ajahn Chah because he's giving all these teachings about non-attachment, but the student notices that he always uses the same drinking glass. And he says, you know, you're telling us all about non-attachment to material things, but we see that you're always using the same drinking glass, and it looks like you might be attached to that glass, right? Some fucking uppity American confronting the Buddhist master. And he holds up his glass and he's like, you noticed. This is really actually my favorite glass. He's like, and I love the way that it holds my water so admirably. And it was like a glass, I guess, you know, and he says, and sometimes the sun will hit it and like it will reflect little rainbows into the water. And he's like having this whole like intimate relationship with this drinking glass. He said, and, you know, you're asking me if I'm attached to it. He said, I appreciate it. I enjoy it. It is my glass. I use it. I'm the abbot. I get to choose. Like, that's my glass. He's like, but also I understand impermanence. I understand non-attachment. And to me, this glass is already broken. And because I know that it's not the source of happiness, because I know that it's not permanent, because I know that it's temporary, and that eventually, you know, I'll drop it, or someone else will drop it, or it gets, you know, dropped in the sink or something, it'll break. And that I don't get to keep this glass. This glass is not the source of my happiness. It's temporary. It's already broken. And that teaching, if we can apply that to everything, to your car, to your iPhone, to your computer, to your record collection, to your glasses, to your shoes, your new shoes, they're already scuffed. To your body, right? My father took that teaching in his book, Who Dies? And he said, yeah, what if we apply it to our bodies and to each other and say, already dead. As a practice of appreciating of the temporariness and the preciousness of material things, of physical, whatever it is, it's not gonna last. And if we are so surprised when we wreck our car or gets, you know, scratched or dented, or we get bored of it. And like, I used to be so excited about this 99-cent store plastic glass, and now I'm not. And understanding impermanence and the transient nature of material things. But also acknowledging, like, yep, I like stuff. And sense pleasures, likewise. Waking up to, like, no matter how much pleasure, it doesn't last. It's, you know, that I said it before, and it's, I love that the definition of the second noble truth, the cause of human suffering, isn't just craving. It's repetitive craving, because we want something and then we repeat. I want it. I want something else. I want something else. I want something else. Pleasure is too transient. So it's always, I think in neuroscience, they call it the hedonic treadmill. No matter, you know, you're just always running in this circle, chasing the next hedonic experience. So what's something delicious, something that smells good, looks good, tastes good, feels good. Pleasure, 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 but you never get anywhere with it because you're just on the treadmill of chasing pleasure. But when you're having that pleasure, you're happy for how, you know, fucking stoked. Feels so good, pleasure. That delicious meal, that wonderful sexuality, that, you know, comfort, that whatever it is, it, you know, pleasure feels so good while it lasts until it passes, then, you know, and then you're like, wait, next, what's next? What's next? What's next? Eating something delicious, thinking about what's for dessert instead of just enjoying the, you know, this savory thing is really delicious, but I'm craving sweet. And the happiness of debtlessness and blamelessness and some of it's fine. You know, the debtlessness is financial. Like we probably all know what it's like to be stressed about finances, to be in debt, to not have abundance, to not have, it sucks. But there's a level of stress around money that we, probably have all experienced at one point or another. And there's a kind of relaxing of the nervous system when you pay off your bills. You're like, whoo, it feels great to not be in debt. Maybe some people, I think so many Americans live in so much debt that you've never experienced that. There's always a mortgage, there's always something, some debt. And it's interesting that the Buddha included this. He's like, yeah, it sucks to owe. There's the joy of renunciation. The monks who like freedom from any financial obligation, just living day to day based on what's offered to them, no debt. I like to also think about it as emotional debt, the happiness of making amends, the happiness of saying, like, I've done everything that I can to forgive, to ask for forgiveness. In recovery, we put a lot of focus on making amends and taking responsibility for where we've been unskillful, unkind, caused harm, stolen, whatever it was. But it's also really interesting to think about debts of gratitude. Think about your life and people that you appreciate, and did you really express it well? Like if you were on your deathbed soon, and you look back at your life, and you're like, there's a bunch of people that I've didn't or or not recently told how much I appreciate them, how much I love them, how much gratitude I have for the kindness that they showed me in this lifetime. A debt of gratitude. So that practice of staying current, of saying it. And that delusion that I live in, I think a lot of us live in, of like that we have time and that I'll do it later. I'll see you later. I'll say it later, rather than staying current. I was one time having dinner with one of my teachers, and I said goodbye and I said, I'll see you later. And he said, okay, but everything's impermanent. And we don't know if we'll ever see each other again. So why don't you just, say goodbye forever? And having that sort of like, don't leave anything left unsaid, just in case you get hit by a bus on the way home, just in case, you have a stroke or a heart attack or they do, and you don't get to say it later in this world of impermanence. This sort of express the, I really appreciate you, maybe please forgive me for being a jerk or whatever it was. So these teachings on empathy, so much of the teachings are about changing our relationship internally. Develop compassion for your pain. Develop non-attached appreciation to your pleasure that you experience. Also, develop empathy for what other people are going through. And it's so easy to get resentful at people and jealous of people. And how much suffering have you created in your life because your mind's tendency towards comparing and jealousy? The more we strengthen this tendency towards appreciation, good for you, celebrating, the less we suffer, right? So there's this benefit for us around empathetic appreciation. I'm happy for you rather than feel that self-centered, I feel threatened by your happiness. It's natural. I don't think it's our fault that we experience that. I mean, jealousy is just such a normal human emotion. Envy, the comparing mind does it all by itself. Some self-centeredness. It's no judgment in it, but this is one of the interventions. This is one of the practices that can give us some freedom around that mind tendency of comparing and jealousy and envy. and that Dutch greeting, you know, contemplate that, like when you are connecting with people and saying goodbye to people, of just like, I guess we do it a little bit in like, I wish you well, or good luck, or, you know, may, you know, this sort of internal feeling of, you know, I hope it goes well for you. Success. I wish for you to be successful. You know, whatever's next for you, I hope it. Surfers are good at it, like that stoked attitude. You know, that sort of attitude of just like, be stoked for each other. Maybe it's just in the language. Maybe surf, you know, I know a bunch of really violent surfers, but. But that cultivating that attitude of being stoked for each other. So those are some of my thoughts on this teaching. The Buddhist term is mudita. We translate it as empathetic joy, appreciative joy, sympathetic joy, focusing on not only our own gratitude and appreciation, but focusing on meeting each other with that kind of feeling of celebrating each other. So spend the last few minutes if there's any questions about this teaching or anything else. Please, Eric.
So the teaching is to have compassion for other people's joy, right? Meaning their successes or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that you have compassion? Is it understood that you have compassion for their joys, even when something happens to them that you might, it might not be joyful to you?
Is it harmful to you other than being jealous of it?
Well, maybe you can be kind of neutral. Like, yes, okay. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
That's not something that would bring me joy. And the question is, because like, there's people I know that get joy out of beating someone down.
Yeah.
You know that, what I mean?
Yeah.
And so am I supposed to have compassion for their joy, even though that doesn't make me happy?
Yeah. No, and that's why I tried to...
skillful, right?
Yeah, in the beginning I said, you know, we absolutely have to qualify it by wise actions, you know, skillful sources of success, of joy, not violence, not greed, not hatred, not because yes, for sure there's people that get joy out of violence, and it's like, no, we're not celebrating that. Just the good shit, just because that, you know, those same guys that get joy out of violence or women, you know, also get joy out of like playing with their kids and being kind. And so you got to think of the positive, the actual wholesome, you know, actions that you're appreciating, not appreciating any of the negative sources of joy, none of the sadistic sources of joy. yeah.
So if you're not, so you don't have kids,
yeah,
you can still be joyful for them without knowing what that experience is like, correct?
Well, it's
I
a.
I feel like I have to kind of know, you know what I mean?
So it's a practice. What the Buddha said was when he freed himself from the suffering of self-centeredness, what remained was a sense of appreciating everybody's wholesome happiness. And like, we're unenlightened and self-centered, so we don't feel it. But that's where this teaching comes in of like, okay, I don't feel it, but I want to be more like the Buddha. I want to experience more. I want to be more attuned. Like, no, you're fucking playing with your kids doesn't make me happy, but I want to celebrate that more. I want to appreciate that it makes you happy. I want to feel more empathetic towards what you're, you know, like, I only like my kids. I don't care about you. Like, yes. But that's why we're trying to train our mind to be, our heart to be bigger in that, and to actually attune to being like, this is bringing you joy. I'm happy for you. It doesn't, you know, it's pretty radical. Just like this is bringing you pain, I'm trying to learn to care about your pain. So just as, you know, compassion is the wise response to pain, appreciation is the wise response to healthy sources of joy, appreciation, and not just ourselves, each other. And that, you know, perspective that if we take this path far enough, this will happen naturally. You've probably heard me say, one teacher, this monk that I was talking to a few years ago, he said, just by doing Vipassana, mindfulness, present time, mindfulness, awareness, he said for him, and he'd been a serious meditator for a long time, he said, but eventually just the mindful investigation turning towards, it felt like there was like a drape, like a heavy curtain over my heart. And that mindfulness started to pull that drape, that curtain, that cover back from my heart. And then naturally my heart started to have more loving kindness, more compassion, more empathy and connection with others. And it was through the deep investigation of mindfulness led to that state. I think that that's also what the Buddha experienced. Mindfulness led to attunement and connection and a wise response. Now, so we're, you know, and you guys, you know, you come all the time. Mostly we do mindfulness here. And hopefully it will lead to this sort of empathetic connection and attunement, but maybe that's decades in the making for most of us of meditation practice. And so there are these also these other practices of like, okay, rather than waiting for that to be revealed, in the meantime, I'll say these phrases to kind of create some neural pathways of appreciation and empathy. And, you know, it's a little bit of the fake it till you make it attitude. I don't care about everybody else's joy yet, but I want to. So I'll put those thoughts in my mind. May you be happy. May you be successful. May it continue. May it increase. What a good attitude to try to create in our minds, because the mind's not doing that yet. So I'm going to train my mind to do that with these aspirational phrases. Mark, go ahead.
Thanks, Noah. This is like, it's ironic tonight. It's like going to one of the recovery meetings where you leave and you go, oh, this whole meeting was about me. You know, I'm at that place kind of like right now, like walking on the fence. I have appreciative joy. I look around. I've had over the, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, you know, periods of loneliness, things like that. And I've wanted relationship. I have appreciative joy for like Jeff and Em, you and Lily, Ward and Grace, you know, some of the people and the other people I see here in the Sangha. And, you know, wanting that kind of connection. So pleasure, seeking pleasure and, you know, companionship, that type of thing. And yet now it's come and coming from a couple different directions. And I am at the point where I'm trying to, I want to follow, you know, those lustful feelings or whatever, all those, the different things that, for the attraction, the pleasure, or, you know, that whatever, but still, I guess from the teachings, I'm having those thoughts about like, if I do this, I'm going to become attached to this. And then I don't want that. I like that I do what I want when I want, you know, I like that stuff. And I'm afraid that, not afraid. I feel like if I do commit, that then I'm going to have expectations from that other person. I may let them down. They may let me, you know, all the suffering that ends up causing, you know, being caused if I'm not able to latch onto that. Well, this is just an impermanent, like the glass, like you're talking about. It's kind of hard to do that with people, you know, for me, I guess. So I don't know. It's just a thing that it's a place like, you know, you can be on one side or the other. Okay. Yeah. I'm fine with not having any of that, but then you could be in that place where I'm at, where it's like, yeah, do I really want to step into this? Because right now things aren't so bad. I'm actually in pretty peaceful. So I don't know if you can even expand on that, but I wanted to thank you because this has meant a lot to me tonight. It's right where I'm at right now.
I mean, I don't know. It's a big topic. I'll make a couple quick comments. Yeah, we have to go into relationships with this same attitude of 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. Like, you know, we all know, you know, there's a lot of joy and love and intimacy and connection, and there's a lot of sorrow in it. And, you know, a lot of, you know, what do you want for dinner? every day for the rest of your life. And, you know, all of the conflict that happens and different attitudes and moods and, you know, inevitable, you know, challenges in relationships that, you know, sound, you know, it's like when we're romanticizing a relationship, we're like, oh, this is going to be great all the time. And we're always going to have the same desire system. And this is like, the reality is, of course, it's going to be difficult at times. And, you know, so difficult. And that clinging, like, you know, Mark was talking about, of like, and how do I do it without clinging? And the humility of like, I can't be in a relationship without getting attached. And because I get attached, I'm going to suffer. And so I'm signing up for some of that suffering. And, you know, especially if you've really been studying and understanding the Buddha's teachings, and you know, this sort of model that we have, I feel like it's really confusing for us of like, you know, the Buddha was like, it's not really worth it. Just be celibate. And then that, for me, like, that's always confusing of like, fuck, I want to be enlightened and intimate. And the Buddha was like, well, you know, I don't know if you can have both. You know, I mean, supposedly, you know, there, it is possible to become an enlightened being while in relationship, but clearly it's a lot easier if you're celibate, because that's what the monks and the nuns and the Buddha did. They're just like, you know, if you really want to get free from clinging to pleasure, stop fucking. Because hard to be in that, you know, intimate, connected, loving, sexual relationships without suffering, you know, maybe not impossible. So good luck to all of us. And, you know, we enter into relationships. I think the way I enter into relationships is like, I'm going to be as loving and compassionate and tolerant and non-attached and connected as I can. And I'm going to fail at doing it perfectly. And I'm going to cling, and I'm going to be aversive, and I'm going to have conflict. And all of that is going to be part of it. And not letting go, you know, letting go of that expectation that any, you know, that the relationship's going to make you happy. It's going to be work. It's going to be practice. I think, you know, one of my, you know, huge inspirations for relationships is it's going to be healing, you know, and that was one of the questions that I have, you know, for you, Mark, anybody else, and, you know, for the celibates, is there some level of healing that doesn't happen if you do the celibacy path? I sort of got convinced, I'm convinced on whatever level, that I've got a bunch of healing that needs to take place relationally in intimate relationships. And that if I'm just avoidant of that, that there's something that I'm going to miss in this process of awakening and healing. I could be wrong. You know, I really love the celibates. I really love the monks. They seem incredibly happy without relationships. And that, you know, they also will admit that they have sexual desire and that they have loneliness and all of that, but they have a level of equanimity with it, that those of us who keep relationship on the table and are in relationships, I feel like, you know, most of them have a much higher level of satisfaction than us householders. Anyways, that's a, you know, I could do a whole talk on sex and relationships, and maybe I will soon. Last one, Lee, we'll end here.
Hey, Noah. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much. This has also been just like a really amazing, helpful talk and meditation today. I have a question regarding like time with mindfulness, and how do you reach an empathetic joy or compassion when you have not much time, like when you're really stressed and it's kind of thinking on a moment to moment level, or like an hour where someone is like really kind of disappointing you, or there's some kind of jealousy happening, or there's some kind of you're not able to like access the mindfulness that would lead to that compassion or lead to that like wisdom, or just kind of more of a macro perspective of what's going on that helps you connect to them more. I was just curious if you have any like suggestions for what to do in that kind of like stressful or shortened, it's a feeling. Sometimes you do have the moment, but it doesn't feel like you do, to take it, to be able to kind of like have that mindfulness. And it's just been happening over and over again to me recently. And I've been feeling like I'm like slipping on my practice because I haven't been able to get mindful in those moments. So I was just wondering if you had anything to share regarding that.
And the main thing that comes up for me around that question is just the humility to acknowledge that we just can't do it all the time. We have that aspiration, like I was sort of saying, to my marriage or relation, you know, of like, I have this intention to be mindfully attuned and compassionate and patient, and then I fucking fail all the time. And so, you know, there's just that having that humility of like, yeah, I want to be this really wise person, and I have all of these high aspirations, and I'm just not there all of the time. I'm not there yet. That sort of, hopefully, the more we practice and the long-term practice, that we're able to do it more often. And I don't know, Lee, how long you've been sitting or how much you sit, but there is something of like what you put into it is going to be in the long run what you get out of it. You know, if you're sitting 45 minutes every day over the period of years, you're going to see, oh, before meditation, I couldn't do this hardly at all. I had very little compassion, very little attunement. But now after some years of sitting and doing the practices, I'm finding that I have a greater ability to do it and more consistent ability to do it. And, you know, going from like 5% of the time to 10% to 20% to 30, like half of the time I can be kind, I can be compassionate, I can be patient, not, you know, and hopefully we'll get to the place where like 90% of the time you can be kind, you can be patient, you can be attuned, you can be connected in that way. And then, you know, probably even for the, you know, most, maybe, you know, enlightenment means all of the time, but all of those of us that fall short of enlightenment, like if you can be that way, like 80% of the time, but 20% of the time, you're going to have the humility to be like, nope, I get a little reactive 20% of the time, you know, some percentage of the time, I don't show up in the way that I can most of the time. I'm off my game. You know, I'm not attuned, not mindful, not kind, not compassionate, some percentage. So I think it's humility to acknowledge our where we're at. Not there yet. Not there all the time yet. Hope that was helpful. We'll leave it there.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Welcome. Announcements are, we got these new stickers that aren't up on the website yet that say, I see you, Mara, which everybody needs. I don't know if we put any out, but we can put some out here. Mara is the character, and it's just a really good sort of reminder of like Mara attacks. I'll give a talk on it soon. I do it all the time, but I'll do another one soon. So those, I know Patty has them, but they're not on the website. Sebastian will get them put up soon this week, and they'll be available. The fall 9-night silent retreat through Against the Stream is up for registration. It's here in Los Angeles. It's an urban 10 days, 9-night mindfulness. You know, like if you want to be able to do this stuff a little bit better, come on retreat. The longer you spend, you know, on the cushion doing this stuff, the more you'll be able to integrate it. So the fall retreat, it's September 24th through October 3rd, I believe are the dates, something like that, late September. It's open for registration. There's some scholarship money available if you want to come, but you can't afford it. Let us know. We can take about 25 people at this retreat center. It's small. It's in Echo Park. It's like an urban Los Angeles retreat. So it's a cool place. We're going there this weekend for the weekend retreat. We'll report, I'll tell you next week how it was. The pilgrimage that I'm leading to India in November, there's about 10 spots left. If you're thinking about coming to India, it's November 14th or 15th through 24th through through 14th through 25th, something like that. We're going to be together for like 11 or 12 days in India. There's like 10 spots left. If you're thinking about coming, sign up before they're gone. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be on a train going to all of the different Buddhist pilgrimage sites where the Buddha was born, where the Buddha was enlightened, where the Buddha died. I'll be giving some teachings at all of those places, and we'll be traveling together and hopefully not getting giardia. I think that's it as far as announcements. I need to schedule another day long. Maybe I'll get something on the books for June or July. Classes done by donation against the stream is totally dependent and supported by your donations. Please be as generous as you'd like to be, as you can be. Consider how you spend your money and how much you appreciate the meditation instructions and this community that we have, and give generously. Sebastian's there to receive donations at the front. There's a bowl. You can do Venmo. You can do PayPal. Online, there's a link in the chat there that Emily and Jeff put in there, so that you can make an online donation. And thank you for your financial support, your generosity. May any goodness that comes from our practice be gathered in our own hearts and appreciated, and then extended, shared, offered, sharing these blessings, this merit, this goodness with each other. May each one of us heal. May each one of us awaken, and together may we create a positive change on this planet. Thank you, and goodbye forever. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. This is Noah Levine, founder of Against the Stream and Refuge Recovery. If you feel moved to leave a donation, there's a link in the show notes.